This morning's reading will be offered by our guest speaker, the Reverend Tandy Rogers, and will be followed by her sermon, We Were Made for These Times. Reverend Rogers is a Congregational Life staff member for the Pacific Western region of the Unitarian Universalist Association. She serves as primary contact for congregations in Alaska, Washington, and Idaho, as well as working with all Pacific Western region congregations as a specialist in conflict transformation, accessibility and inclusion ministry, and working with all emerging ministries in the Pacific Western region. Tandy writes, preaches, and speaks widely about growth and religious innovation, and teaches religious education for a changing world at Meadville-Lombard Theological School. She's especially passionate about congregational polity in the 21st century, covenant, faith formation, and multi-generational communities. Tandy is both ordained to the UU ministry and a credentialed religious educator, master level. Please welcome Reverend Tandy Rogers.
Tim has agreed to help me with the opening reading, which we've agreed is way too long to be called a reading, but I think you'll enjoy it. This is an adaptation from Clarissa Pinkola Essie's We Were Made for These Times. My friends, do not lose heart. We were made for these times. I have heard from so many recently who are deeply and properly bewildered. They are concerned about the state of affairs in our world now, and ours is a time of almost daily astonishment and often righteous rage over the latest degradations of what matters most to civilized, visionary people.
You are right in your assessments. The luster and hubris some have aspired to while endorsing acts so heinous against children, elders, everyday people, the poor, the unguarded, the helpless, is breathtaking. Yet I urge you, ask you, gentle you, to please not spend your spirit dry by bewailing these difficult times. Especially do not lose hope. Most particularly because the fact is that we were made for these times. Yes, for years we have been learning, practicing, been in training for, and just waiting to meet on this exact plane of engagement.
I grew up on the Great Lakes, and I recognize a seaworthy vessel when I see one. Regarding awakened souls, there has never been more able vessels in the waters than there are right now across the world. And they are fully provisioned and able to signal one another as never before in the history of humankind.
Look out over the prow. There are millions of boats of righteous souls on the waters with you. Even though your veneers may shiver from every wave in this stormy roil, I assure you that the long timbers composing your prow and rudder come from the greater forest. That long grained lumber is known to withstand storms, to hold together, to hold its own, and to advance regardless.
In any dark time, there is a tendency to veer towards fainting over how much is wrong and unmended in the world. Do not focus on that. There is a tendency, too, to fall into being weakened by dwelling on what is outside your reach, by what cannot yet be. Do not focus on that. That is spending the wind without raising the sails.
We are needed. That is all we can know. And though we meet resistance, we more so will meet great souls who will hail us, love us, and guide us, and we will know them when they appear.
Ours is not the task of fixing the entire world at once, but of stretching out to mend the part of the world that is within our reach. Any small, calm thing that one soul can do to help another soul, to assist some portion of this poor, suffering world, will help immensely. It is not given to us to know which act or by whom will cause the critical mass to tip to an enduring good.
What is needed for dramatic change is an accumulation of acts, adding, adding to, adding more, continuing. We know that it does not take everyone on earth to bring justice and peace, but only a small, determined group who will not give up during the first, second, or hundredth gale.
One of the most calming and powerful actions you can do to intervene in a stormy world is to rise up and show your soul. Soul on deck shines like gold in dark times. The light of the soul throws sparks, can send up flares, builds signal fires, causes proper matter to catch fire. To display the lantern of the soul in shadowy times like this, to be fierce and to show mercy towards others, both are acts of immense bravery and greatest necessity.
Struggling souls catch light from other souls who are fully lit and willing to show it. If you would help to calm the tumult, this is one of the strongest things you can do.
There will always be times when you feel discouraged. I too have felt despair many times in my life, but I do not keep a chair for it. I will not entertain it. It is not allowed to eat from my plate.
The reason is this. In my uttermost bones, I know something, as do you. It is that there can be no despair when you remember why you came to earth and what you choose to serve. The good words we say and the good deeds we do are not ours. They are the words and deeds of the love who brought us here. In that spirit, I hope you will write this on your wall. When the great ship is in harbor and moored, it is safe. There can be no doubt. But that is not what great ships are built for.
On top of any turmoil, grief, or challenges in our personal lives, and we all have some, and some have quite a lot, we're living in a time of escalating political chaos. It feels overwhelming and at times perilous. We might feel as if we were struggling to stay afloat in a storm-tossed sea. I invite you to let that feeling in. Picture yourself bobbing on the waves, trying to keep your head above the water. Give yourself a life preserver. Our lives are not at risk, at least not at this particular moment. But it's not a pleasant place to be out of control at the mercy of heaving swells. Now, imagine that the people sitting next to you are in the water, too. Reach out to them. And you can reach out to them in real life if you'd like. Feel the way two become more stable than one, three more stable than two, and so on until you are surrounded and supported by huge clumps of people all rising and falling together on those waves. That's what community does for us, is it not? So let's take a moment of silence now, breathing together, our breath like the dip and pull of waves. Breathe in strength. Breathe out peace. Breathe in love. Breathe out commitment. Breathe in courage. And breathe out compassion. It is good to be with you right here and right now. Yesterday, many of you gathered with me for a lively morning. We spent a lot of time discovering that religious education lives in all the nooks and crannies of our fellowship life, not just the hour on Sunday morning when we sing the kids out. The guiding questions I asked of those present were, when and how did you feel like you first belonged to the West Hills UU Fellowship? actually a religious education question. Sneaky. How did you learn to be Unitarian Universalist? Was it a moment? Was it over time? Was it a curriculum? Was it with other people? Perhaps it was a book. And then I asked, imagine a child grows up in this fellowship and now embodies the values of this community. How did they learn those values? Well, in small groups, we explored those questions, and then people wrote answers on sticky notes, and they placed them in this grid, this makeshift grid we made on the wall. And they had multiple contexts, like worship, the hour of Sunday school, or RE, whether that be for an adult, a youth, or an adult, or a child. Family, wider community, nature, you get the idea. The grid was filled all over. There were a couple that had only a few, and we wondered how we might live in more fully into those spaces. This confirmed that religious education lives in the entire fabric of the fellowship. And a handful of folks said that they felt like they belonged at potlucks and dinners in each other's homes. What if we intentionally wrapped the children into those events so they knew that they belonged and mattered? What if we intentionally made our justice work about passing on those values and skills to the next generation? Mentoring is mighty powerful. Can you imagine? Well, we started to imagine. We also revisited your unfolding narrative, your timeline, which I think is really good to do regularly, on a regular basis. And lots of people, there's a lot of energy over that and lots of fantastic stories. And a couple things stood out. An important thing I want to tell you all is that your two longest tenured professionals in the congregation were religious educators. And not only were they beloved within the walls of this community, these educators, okay, Cindy Leitner and Rebecca Gammons, they were leaders outside in their cluster among their colleagues at the district level, at a national level. So I don't know if you know that, but you launched those leaders together to serve the greater good. They were members here first and then called to leadership. And I wonder, will you launch another bright leader to grow your RE program and to serve here and beyond? I hope so, because it's in your DNA. Another exercise we did yesterday was to identify the ills and the evils in the world. We filled an entire paper. I think we could have kept going. And then we identified how this community provides antidotes to those ills, how you all are medicine to an aching, sick world. And that work of healing, my friends, is also religious education, whether it's tending to the spiritual care or ethical development or a deeper understanding of what it means to be Unitarian Universalist. The world needs us. We need one another, and what we do matters. You are a powerful countercultural community where you practice being the world you dream about and then go out and try to build it in the wider community. The truth is, we as Unitarian Universalists were made for these times, you especially. It's in your DNA. I saw it in your story. You've been practicing for years and decades. We are religious meaning makers at our core, and we hold dear the very values that are at risk. We've been practicing for these times, and we have spiritual practices for these times. I believe showing up, specifically showing up for those most vulnerable, as you do, for those showing up for those who are different than us, is one of, if not the, UU spiritual practice of our current times. It develops our personal growth, pushes us toward our highest divine potential, and I've identified six other practices within that practice of showing up. practicing being awkward, because we're risking and trying and learning and stretching. And when we first start doing these things, we're awkward. Expect it. Own it as a badge of honor. Practicing surrender, particularly surrendering being the clever ones and having all the right answers. I'm hearing a little chuckle. You might see yourself in these. I wrote these actually for myself. The practice, spiritual practice of following, when we have been so attached to being the leaders as part of our identity. Practicing humility, letting go of the need to be preciously unique as we experience the very values we hold dear, embodied fiercely and beautifully by other movements. Practicing our own salvation, because we are not saved by ourselves alone, but in community and in stretching. All lives will only matter when Black lives and other most vulnerable lives matter and survive and thrive. Our liberation is an interdependent web of existence. And practicing hope, because we are a people of faith and despair is not an option. And practicing shared ministry. I have an embodied metaphor of what that means. It will involve all of you. So, Tracy, are you in the house? All right. So, we've got a minister, and there's ministries, and then there's shared ministry. So, holding all your hands. Okay, you ready for this? So, point, you can go like this if you want to. Tracy's in the back. So, minister, ministries, and then Tracy, sit down. Shared ministry. Okay, got it? That shared ministry. And actually, George, at the opening when you explained shared ministry, I'm like, you didn't need me to come tell you what shared ministry was. You got this down. So notice that the minister is not above anyone else. Notice that we are all connected, all responsible, all both a blessing and blessed. May you continue your journey together. The countercultural community where we practice being the world we dream about and then try to build it in our wider community. You have all you need. You are made for these times.
We have some time for some questions and comments, and if you'd raise your hand, I will bring the microphone around to you if I can find it here.
Thank you for coming and joining us on our journey. So one of the things that I'm kind of confused by, maybe you can help me with, is that we both share our journeys together. We don't exactly share the journey. You know, I mean, there's Wolf, but we all kind of we all have our different journeys. And that's something special to me because I get to meet different people on different journeys. What's confusing to me is the notion of vision. I don't see vision as a part of the principles, and yet there's a lot of talk of a shared vision. And I don't really get what that means. Does it mean that we're supposed to be more of a religion someday? Or, you know, why should we share a vision when we're all on different journeys?
And then this is new for me. Do I answer that or do you answer that? Okay, I do. No. No. Oh my gosh, so much to unpack. Thank you for that. And I go to Unitarian Universalist communities because when somebody else's journey is different than mine, I know my journey more deeply. That diversity informs, like we hold up a mirror to each other, right? And that is precious, absolutely precious. And that's part of the a free and responsible search for truth and meaning within our principles. The principles aren't our doctrine. They're guides, they're suggestions. They were actually created because our kids, and I don't have the exact data, but Rebecca does. Do you know the date? It was 85? okay, so grab that. They didn't show up until 1985. I think that's there. And you know why? It's because we were doing more and more interfaith work. We were showing up more as a religion, and many people see us as a religion. We're a faith tradition. And the we don't have a denomination. We have an association, a free association of congregations that come together. And just like each congregation, you get to decide what it means to be a member, and you get to decide what is important to you collectively. So what is your mission in the world? What is the vision that you're trying to build? So back to the principles. The principles were designed because the kids would go to school and others would make fun of them for, like, what do you believe? Unitarian Universalists don't believe anything. And in 85, we were starting to make news by being out in the community. And they were really distraught. And so wise people thought, we need to gather something so the kids have something to say. This is what we believe. There isn't, like, an empty question mark. There's question marks with all sorts of a mosaic question mark. I think instead of a cross, there's a mosaic question mark. I would say they are guideposts. So they're behavioral. This is how we will behave. And a vision is, what is the world you dream about? You know, so I'm a teacher by first vocation, and the kids would come into school, and we would assess, like, where are they? Where do they need to be at the end of the year? And then we would decide together how to get there. That's our mission. This is our vision of where we need to be. In so many different ways, so many different learners. So there wasn't one learning plan. If there were 12 kids in the room, there were at least 15 learning plans as to how to get there. Right? And that's how I see our congregation. But where are you? Who are you? Where do you want to be? And then how together are you going to get there? And there's many, many ways to get there. That's how I do.
One of the things that came up yesterday was called RE, and that was actually referring to the youth and children's RE, I believe. I appreciate your talk today about how everything is RE, but I've pondered the youth and children's RE somewhat and realized that, speaking for myself, I don't know even the names of the people who are involved in that. And I suspect that there is a whole congregation of old guys like me or old women who also don't know anything about that. And I wonder, how do we get past that? And one thing I've decided, I am going to sign up to help in the RE, and because I don't know how else to know who they are.
Right. And you have to answer right there. The very power of learning people's names, like the kids' names, and saying, I'm glad you're here. Now, I want to point out, never once did I, people referred to RE as children and youth RE. I never once have referred to it as, because I believe in everything that it's cradle to grave is what RE stands out. So when your board gathers, there's RE happening, because just by service, you have a deeper understanding of what it means to be a Unitarian Universalist, what it means to be an ethical person. As your board decides, you know, big things for your, on behalf of the congregation, that's ethical development going on, that's RE. So I really believe that religious education is everything we do. Unitarian Universalism is all we teach, and the congregation is the curriculum.
Hi, I was there yesterday too, and I've been thinking a lot about it, like you have, Jim. And I thought, why not in the summer potlucks? You know, usually when we have potlucks, it's for a committee. So children aren't welcome at committee potlucks. We have so many of them. So why not in the summertime, when we have, both of us will have room in our houses, say, kids welcome. And why not have name tags for the kids? Why do just adults have name tags? How am I going to get to know their names if I see them, but they don't have a name tag. They need name tags. And the other thing is, some of us got up because we walked around the ice building. I would love to take a couple of kids on that walk, that, especially the second Thursday. Buddhist walk is a very peaceful, meditative walk. I would love to pick up a couple of kids, but it's during their school day, so I don't know how that would work. But that's what you triggered in me, talking about how to incorporate the kids into the life of the fellowship.
Awesome. And I'm betting there might be some parents who would view that as a very solid reason to take kids out of school, just saying. Yeah.
I was just thinking that when we have the family services and calling the kids up front to acknowledge their names, you know, there are usually just like a half a dozen or so, that wouldn't take very much time, and that would be a way for them to feel more included and for people to start learning their names more.
I would like to emphasize that we live in a very diverse world. People have different religions, and people have different ideas when does life begin. We have people disagree on what economic system we have. And I think the only way we can live together in this diverse world, I think we must understand how opposition feels. And whenever possible, compromise. And for feedback, like, good example, like in America right now, many of the liberals don't like Trump. But Trump is not, he himself may have 1 billion, but he represents thousands of people who honestly believe that he is correct. For those of us who don't, we must have things which will make people less concerned, like we're saying, when we have cheap labor coming in, the white cheap white laborers lose a job. When Detroit moves to the country, people jump. We as a society, we make certain that people have a place to eat, shelter. You know, when we have the people have the needs of them, they'll be less extreme. And the demagogues won't have much chance of getting elected.
To all of those who have expressed interest in helping kids RE, thank you. And I just wanted to say that the RE committee is small and tired and stressed and would love to have more members or just more helpers on an ad hoc basis. And their meetings are once a month, shortly after Sunday service. The next one, if they're always the second Sunday of the month, so the next one is second Sunday of November. And thank you again for your willingness.
Wait, can you explain, like, what do people do on the RE committee? What kind of skills do you need? Sorry to put you on the spot.
A warm body.
Like, is it a working committee? Like, you roll up your sleeves and you do stuff, or is it a vision committee?
Oh.
Or all of it?
Well, it's a little, right now it's all teachers. The RE teachers are the RE committee, which is why they're so tired and which is why they're not here. Which is kind of why they're, why RE is sort of a mystery, because they're not here in the sanctuary because they're teachers. So they don't get to represent themselves. What the committee does is plan what the classes will do, what the kids will do, and when there are extra activities for the kids, it's the RE committee that plans those and tries to make them happen. So people to go shopping for supplies would be helpful. People to make things, like, you know, cut out shapes, that type of thing, that would be helpful. I'm not technically on the RE committee. I'm the board liaison to the RE committee. So I'm a little hesitant to announce what they need. So that's why I put it as show up to a meeting and ask them what they need. Tracy, are you offering to answer that?
So the RE committee right now is a, let's figure out what's going to happen next Sunday kind of committee. But we're really looking at trying to experiment with other ways of thinking about what kids do on Sunday mornings, as well as we were talking about engaging them in the life of the church in a richer way. And so the RE committee is hopefully transitioning into more of a visioning, figuring out things, how do we engage kids in the wider religious education of our church, what are some other ways to do things. And so it's my goal to create more of a visioning and engagement, how we engage kids and families in the whole life of our congregation, think about family ministry. And so we would be any creative thinkers who care about this issue. That's what we want in the RA committee. People who can have some time to think and maybe try some things out. Maybe 3 hours a month. An hour at the RA committee meeting, an hour and a half, and an hour and a half of doing something with our kids. And curiosity, interest, wonder, that's what we're looking for. So I think most of you got it, actually.
I'm Suzanne Rileson, co-chair of Buildings and Grounds Committee in charge of grounds. And I will volunteer to be on the RE committee with the goal of wanting to work with the kids in our trees out on the ground, because they do it anyway. And let's be more explicitly spiritual about it, maybe bring some component to them that's of more of a churchy nature. Although I suspect they're doing real well on that score too, really. But it would be fun for me. I've been wanting to know more what they want. They are the main users of our tree. And I want, we're improving our ground. And so there's a connection. And I'll do that. Meeting after church on second Sunday isn't so bad. I can do that. Yeah.
All right. We are out of time this week. So I think we will have to, our final hymn was Carry the Flame of Peace and Love. We will carry that in our own ways and our own times after we leave the sanctuary today. And thank you again for Reverend Andy Rogers.